I like to think everyone gets on and contributes to the memory of my father, Joe M. P. Hunt, a very special man. He was born in Seattle in 1926 to Michelle and Mateo P. Hunt and had three sisters, Regina, Lenora, and Becky. He had a wonderful childhood, growing up in the old Sephardic neighborhood in the Central District. He was quite the entrepreneur. At the age of nine, he sold magazines outside Rhodes Department Store where my grandpa worked. And while my grandpa was shining shoes, my dad was selling magazines and making 1 cent for every 5 cent magazine he sold. When he was 11, he sold newspapers on Sundays, making $1.30 a day. At 14, he got the best corner selling newspapers on First and Pike. And because it was wartime and everyone was buying papers, he would sell 500 papers a day and make $11. He thought he was big time. He also sold gardenias. He would buy a box of 12 for 25 cents and sell them for a dime each in front of dancing halls. When he was 16, he worked at the shipyards as a metal helper during the summer, making 95 cents an hour. At 17, after going to school during the day, he worked the night shift because it paid 10 cents more per hour. And he still sold newspapers on Sundays because he had a good corner and he didn't want to lose it. He was always a hard worker. As a teenager, he won dance contests with his cousin Reggie Halepa. He was on the track team at Garfield High School and graduated a semester early. After being drafted into the Army during World War II, he did boot camp at Fort Hood and served in both the Philippines and Japan. After the war, he studied accounting at the University of Washington and then went on to work with my grandpa at the tavern, where he became a partner. Eventually, he went into business with my Uncle Dave, owning both the cellar and the entertainment tavern, a good fit for his outgoing personality. He was a historian, especially regarding all the Sephardics. He could tell you the year your grandparents got married, the street they lived on, which house on the block, who their siblings were, and in what order, and what business your grandpa was in. He knew who everybody was and how they were all connected. If anybody wanted to know anything about Sephardic life, the answer was always, ask Joe. He also was very familiar with U.S. history and loved watching history movies, especially about World War II, and always while eating his popcorn. He was a walking encyclopedia. He always knew something about everything and had a mind like a steel trap. He remembered things and was good with figures, which he could do in his head. He was also a road map. He could tell you how to get anywhere, even without him being able to see. If he wanted me to take him somewhere that I wasn't familiar with, he'd say, get in the car, I'll tell you how to go. And while he's blind, off we go. And he'd start with his directions. Take a right off the exit. Go up the hill 4 blocks. You'll see the big brick building. Turn left there. Go down a few blocks and take a right at the barbershop, and so on and so on and so on. He always knew the landmarks. He always got us there. He was amazing. He loved listening to sports, especially football, and his favorite basketball team was Gonzaga, which he knew the names of all the players and their abilities. He was involved in Sephardic life, belonging to Ezra Sereth, where he volunteered for the bazaar and Luncheon Lashon, and where for at least the last 50 years, he promised many kids he would buy them a phone. He was famous for that. One little boy even asked, can I have a silver saddle too? Sure, my dad said. All the kids loved him. He never complained about being boring, not once. However, if the French bread at a restaurant was too doughy, or they didn't serve dairy gold butter, that was completely different. I'd hear about that all night long. He only complained about the little things. That was entertaining. He was 5 days shy of his 99th birthday, and I feel blessed to have had him as my father for so long. And now I'd like to read a poem that I wrote for his 90th birthday party, which will give you an idea of the kind of father he was. Happy birthday, dear father, from daughter number 2. Who's the best dad there is? Why, that would be you. From the time we were little and you were so grand, you guided us and taught us well and always lent a helping hand. You gave us rides on your back and lifted us with your legs. We always wanted just one more ride, and for that we would beg. You didn't turn us down, although your muscles truly ached, and for things like that, you'll always be the icing on the cake. We had our secret club where you were the president. We sat on coffee cans and used a sheet for our tent. There were big wheel races in the basement and our flag game in the yard. You bought us big hunk candy and took your bites. Boy, those were hard. You threw snowballs at our bedroom window. We laughed in such delight. You taught us how to play baseball and how to fly a kite. I thought you were so cool because you owned a bar, wearing your hip suede jacket and smoking a cigar. You brought us records from your bar and fireworks on Independence Day. You taught us how to ride a bike, standing beside us all the way. You put Mercurochrome on our cuts and washed our feet after play. You sat up with us when we were sick, even though you had worked all day. You may not think we remember, but these little things we do. That's why you're so special. That's why I love you. Dad, I'm glad you were my father. I love you, and I'll miss you for all my days. Until I see you again, you got it.
Thank you very much. I'd like to call upon Michael. Michael?
Yeah.
To share a few words.
My name's Mike Pia, one of Joe Pia's sons. It's funny how my sister wrote her speech, which was wonderful, by the way. Thank you. But at the same time, I'm writing my speech, and it's funny because some of the very same things that she spoke about in her speech, I'll be saying the same thing in mine. And I thought, as she's reading that, she is so right. Everything she says is perfect. And I thought, I'll have nothing left of my speech. Because hers was perfect, and I'm not a speech writer, but she is. But I'll read it anyway. So here we go. I would like to thank everybody for being here and honoring my father. Thank you, I appreciate it. I'd also like to thank the rabbi and also the Sephardic Brotherhood and everybody that coordinated this to get this together. And a special thank you to my sister Jeannie for taking the lead as she does because of her commitments and her brilliance on how to make everything come together. So I specifically and wholeheartedly thank Jeannie for doing everything she did. She was amazing. If you don't know what she did all these years, you're missing out because it was pretty wonderful. So thank you. It's hard to sum up a man like my father, you know, especially a man who lived almost 99 years. Throughout my years with him, it always stood out to me about his strength. And I'm not necessarily saying his physical strength, although he was extremely strong, he had big muscles. I'm referring to his strong-mindedness. Like Jeannie said, with the steel trap, he was very strong-minded, very strong-willed. He was powerful. He could also endure anything if he needed to. It didn't matter what it was. Just like Jeannie said, he He didn't complain about anything that was difficult, just like she said. He was, like Jeannie said, incredibly smart. It was amazing. And she had mentioned, yes, people sometimes would call him the human encyclopedia. He could remember everything, just like she said, your third cousin, when they were born, so on and so forth. And while he's saying all this, who your third cousin is and all that, I'm thinking, I don't even know who my third cousin is. How does he know? So that's what you'd be thinking when he may not even be related to you, but he's telling you who your family is and when they were born and everything. And you're amazed by, how does he know? He's not related, but he knew. He was brilliant that way. I think that basically, in short on that, it was, if you wanted to know, go ask Joe. I heard that many times when someone would say something, go ask Joe and go over to him. So I really think we probably, especially in the 70s and maybe the 60s, I was born in 65, so maybe pardon there, bumper stickers were real popular. I think we should have made bumper stickers. If you want to know, go ask Joe. And we probably would have made a fortune because it would have been true. He really did know. Today, in today's modern world, everybody asks Google. Before Google was invented, my father was Google. That's how it was. He loved trivia and statistics and sports. He loved watching baseball, basketball, football. Those were his three main. While he had his high eyesight, when he lost his eyesight, he then instead listened on the radio, but he was committed to that baseball, basketball, and football, and still knowing who's playing for who, what the scores were, and who's in the series, who's not, and all that type of stuff. He could remember everything. To me, I sometimes thought, like, maybe Hashem is whispering words to him, the answers, the statistics, or whatever it is, because he knows so much. And then maybe he's just passing it along, because, I mean, it's an awful lot what he is able to put out there. I remember several years back, I think my dad was about 85 years old at that time. We were in the car, and he is fully blind at that time. So he, of course, can't see. I'm driving, and I don't remember exactly where we were headed. We were in Seattle, and I missed the turn somewhere in Seattle. Right after I missed that turn, I didn't even say that I missed the turn. He said, "Did you take a right?" And I was afraid to answer him. I was like, no. And he said, "Well, then you're going the wrong way. You missed it. You should have taken a right." I'm thinking to myself, how does he even know that? I didn't tell him, oh, I missed the turn. I mean, how does he know? I'm thinking, I don't get this. He can't see. I can see, and I didn't even know that I was supposed to take the right. But he does. So he, at the rest of the journey, guided me where to go. All right, so tell me what you see. Well, I see this, I see that. Okay, go down two blocks, take a right. There's gonna be a brick building there. Tall building, take a right. I do that, and we get to where we're going through that. And I was thinking, thank God he was in the car. I have no idea where I am. I mean, he's blind, but he'll still get me there. So there was that. Sometimes I thought, because some of his actions were so incredible that way, that I thought, I mean, for a second I think, and I go, can he see? like, is this, maybe it's a test. I'm not sure, but I think I said it to my brother Tom. What if it's a test? What if he's testing us? And he really can see. Of course, not the case, but it, that shows you the incredibleness of how he was, even though he couldn't see, and how his mind worked so brilliantly. So, to me, to say the least, he was very in tune. Very in tune. And he was somewhat religious, so I thought, well, yeah, maybe because of religion, maybe Hashem really is guiding him along, you know, this path. You know, maybe he's speaking to Hashem and Hashem's speaking to him. And sometimes I kind of thought that's the way it was going. So throughout his life, yeah, he worked hard, he helped others, he lived a simple life. He made a good living, but he, you know, he wasn't the show-off type, and he was like a regular guy. As a father, he was very fair, but stern, but fair. And that's something I admired about him. He was always fair. He made sure things were fair, especially with us four children. He wasn't necessarily the type to say, I love you every day, but you didn't really need to hear that so much because he showed it in his actions. I mean, he really showed it, and that was telling us right there. That's what was telling us. While I was growing up, things would happen in my life, and I'd always ask myself, while those things were transpiring, what would Dad do? What would Dad think about whatever the situation was? That question continually guided me. What would Dad do? Always. I remember working for a company years ago, and they weren't treating some of the employees quite fairly. And I thought, again, what would Dad think if he knew what this company was doing to these employees? Even though the company treated me very well, I still felt ashamed because they weren't treating everybody fairly. And I felt like if I told that to my dad, he definitely would not think that was fair or right. And so I was ashamed to tell him. I couldn't tell him. So I thought to myself, I need to tell this company what's going on, see if they can change. So I did, but they didn't change. They stayed the same. So I put in my 2-week notice, and I left the company, never went back. And I thought to myself afterwards that I got that from Dad. He was that kind of person. That's the kind of person he was. Man, he was wonderful. So now, you know, I still think that I'll talk to him, even though he's not physically here, and ask him, you know, Dad, what would you do? And hope that he's listening. Tom Brokaw wrote a book called The Greatest Generation. In that book, he describes the values, honor, love of family, and personal responsibility of yourself and of those people from the greatest generation who fought in World War II, lived a life before, and made a life after that generation, the greatest generation. And that was my father. He was a greatest generation man. That's who he was. And I'm really going to miss him. And I really love him. Thank you.
Thank you, Michael. I'd like to call upon Tom to share words of eulogy. Come on.
Tommy Joe's youngest son. He had 4 children.
So, Gene, why don't you tell me?
I want to take a room and take him to Tommy cutting away. Honor his memory. If you don't like that, we appreciate it well. I'm probably going to say a lot of stuff that Jeannie said because I'm related. Anyways, a week prior to my dad's passing, I was visiting with the client. He was speaking softly, but didn't say much. I turned on the radio to Kixie, an AM station he likes. And we listened to it. It was like, turn the radio with the toenails. I also sounded his toenails. Ooh, they were thick. Not too much information, but. We listened to the radio until it was lunchtime. Then I gave him a kiss on his cheek and said, I'll talk to you later. Something we always said to each other in the evening. I received a call from my sister Janie Friday night. Dad had passed away. Sorry. I've been preparing for this for number of years. But you can't be fully prepared. My heart became heavy at that very moment. I realized that I'd never see him again, physically, but that he'd always be in my heart. I spent a lot of time with Dad over the last 2 decades, going over the past every week and doing odds and ends. Speaking of Dad, nothing major. And having dinner or going out to dinner. We also went to Mazatlan, Mexico almost every year. We enjoyed the sun, and we even went to the ocean one time, holding hands, and the wave knocked us over. He was laughing. We go in the pool every year, too, something he liked a lot. Dad was fit too, as you all know. It wasn't until the last few years where, after a few falls and some hospital stays, he had pneumonia and overcame it. He became old. One time when we were in Mexico and he was 9 years old, I woke up to a sound. I was like, what's going on? 8:30 a.m. I look over and I see him buck naked doing push-ups against the dresser. I said, what are you doing? He said, my exercises. He said, okay, just be careful. Went back to bed for a half hour. He liked history and geography. You could tell someone, it's been so before too, you could tell someone from, you know, their own state or country for that matter, more about it than they knew. They were shocked. So did I. He knew his way around the streets too. He can tell you where you're at on the road. Even when we became blind, it was amazing. The real Google Maps. He loved the synagogue, Congregation Esbacera, and was a member for many, many years. He enjoyed praying and singing, harmonizing with the choir. He donated money and volunteered for years, something else I enjoyed. Dad was pretty meticulous and organized. He dressed up real nice too. Never shabby. Side note, he had back surgery when he was in his 70s and became completely blind because of it. By the way, it's in the medical journal. But that never stopped him from doing tasks at hand. Some of the things he likes, as here before, sports, football, basketball, baseball, on the radio, of course. detail on the radio or on TV. A good tasty meal that's hot, cold water with ice. French bread, fresh. Anchovies in the salad. Oh, candy for sure. Mainly chocolate. Popcorn with salt. Ice cream, chocolate syrup. Oh, yeah, you like a good deal, too. He was thrifty. I remember when I was a kid and he was getting gas. One sign said 64 cents, another up ahead said 59 cents. He said, I'm not paying that, and drove the street to the 59 cent station. I was thinking, geez, only a few cents more. Now I do that. On holidays, he wanted the whole family there. I was excited when a relative from out of town came in. As a family, we spent a lot of holidays together. Rosh Hashanah, Passover, Hanukkah, Yom Kippur, Earth Days, etc. And he loved that. And I was told him by telling them and by showing them the right way to view things. He loved his children and family and friends too. Regularly going to breakfast and coffee at dinner with his friends. I can go on for hours, but I'll just say this. Dad was one of a kind. Sure, he had some faults, but who doesn't? He's like a superhero. Dad, you're going to be really missed. I'll talk to you later.
Very meaningful words, and I appreciate hearing all these sentimental memories of your beloved father, and the little I saw of him, and the more I hear of him now, display what a unique character he really was, for who he was and what he did, and the values that he imparted onto his family. And as we gather to bid farewell to our beloved Jopia Yosef ben Rachel and Matatya, I remember when I first met Joe in the Klein, I did not know that he's blind. When I walked in to meet him, I did not yet know that he could not see. And only after a few minutes in the conversation, that's when I kind of realized that he can't see. That's what I recall. But it was hard to see it at first because he was so with himself and he was so lively and he was so connected to the conversation. He welcomed me, I remember, with a very full heart. He shared everything about the community more than anyone I ever met here in Seattle. And you know, people in Seattle know stuff, right? They know who's who and what's what, but he really knew who's who and what's what. And I think it bypassed anyone else's knowledge and not putting anyone to a lower degree, but he was very unique and outstanding. He gave me the full rundown of everything. We sang Latino songs, we sang holiday prayers together, and I was sitting there and I was like, what is your age? And you can't say, and you're singing these songs, and being new to the community, it meant so much to me, because I was interested in, you know, hearing another Latino proverb or another word or another tune. And then he would ask me questions, and how's this one doing, and how's that one doing? They're still over there, but they moved and they came back, they're still there. And it kind of showed me what Seattle is all about, which is, you know, the unique ties that we all have with each other. It really impressed me to see that he had such a solid memory, such focus on detail. He was very patient when I was speaking to him, very patient. And we used to visit Joe with our Rabbit Sarot youth. Before the holidays, we had a thing that we used to go with the kids to the Klein, and he was one of the friends that we would visit before Rosh Hashanah, Purim, Hanukkah, The kids gathered tightly in his room. While he acknowledged their presence, he gave them a beracha. He was very happy to see them. And they walked out and like, wow, that's Joe Pia. That's what it was like. So when I reflect on thinking, who is Joe Pia? Yosef ben Rachel and Matatia, as we heard from his children, he loved people, loved Jewish history, loved EB, loved being with his friends, with community. He enjoyed everyone from different ages. He enjoyed Ladino, spoke it very well. And raising four children is such a blessing, having four children in this world. And while I did not have the opportunity to visit with all the children, I did get to know Jeannie through phone calls and shared visits to Joe's place in the climb. And I will say that Jeannie showed me what type of father you had. More than what I saw, I could understand who he was by knowing the way that you are, Jeannie, because your love of the land of Israel, of our soldiers, of our people, of Jewish people, of Judaism, they're just spot on. And your devotion to your father is something that we can all learn from, we should all imitate. I mean, Jeannie would visit her father every Sunday. She would make sure that his needs are met. She wouldn't just take things for granted that the nurses were saying. She would make sure it's done right to the quality of care that her father deserves. She would call him twice a day. She would make sure he's taken care of. And when speaking about your beloved father, you shared with me how you have these fond memories of him taking you to Ezra Betzarot. As a kid growing up, you would go to synagogue. And seeing how later on he would come to EB, he would come to synagogue, he would come for Minyan, for Shabbatot, he would donate his time, donate his whatever he could. He would volunteer in bingo events and luncheons and the lunch and lashon and all those things. It showed that he wasn't just, you know, a person with a name on the wall or a seat in the synagogue, but he was there, he rolled up his sleeves when needed because he loved the place. And you know, Rabbi Jonathan Sacks, he has, you know, who doesn't know Rabbi Jonathan Sacks, right? So he speaks about Judaism and Jewish future, Jewish values, and he asks an important question. He says, will we have Jewish children? Will we have Jewish grandchildren? And I think it's a very important question to ask. And I believe that's a sign that we can place like on our fridge, in our car, on our door before leaving the house, because it reminds us when we take that first sip of coffee in the morning or get out to work or get on a car to start our busy lives, we should try and think that with everything that I am doing, how is this building my family in a Jewish way? If I'm on a diet or I'm at the gym or I have a job that I have or vacations I take or the things that I do and the people I meet, what and how does it impart Jewish values and identity, strong Jewish values and identity, to my children? And it could really work in a better, solid, foundational way if you are a proud Jew, if you are a committed Jew. And when I see that with his children, and I saw that particularly with you, because I didn't get a chance to meet you guys yet, but now I see it as well, that's who he was. He was a proud Jew. He was a proud Sephardi. He was a proud Latino Jew in Seattle that loved where he came from and loved being connected to it. There's a very moving story in Pirkei Avot, the ethics of our fathers, when you go to the last chapter, chapter 6, Mishnah 9, I'll just quote it in English. Rabbi Yosef ben Kisma says a story about himself. He says, you know, once I was walking and I was traveling and I went through this town, you know, on my voyage. I was in this town and then a man met me and he greeted me and I greeted him and he said, hey Rabbi, where are you from? I said, I'm from a great city of sages and scribes and scholars. So he said to me, Rabbi, would you consider relocating? We'll get you a U-Haul, you move over here, you live with us. And if you would, I would give you thousands and thousands of golden coins and precious stones and pearls. What do you say? So Rabbi Yosef ben Kisma said, my son, even if you were to give me all the silver and gold and precious stones and pearls that are out there in the world, meaning all of them, I would not dwell anywhere except in a place of Torah. Why? Because when a man passes away, what will accompany him? There will accompany him neither gold or silver nor precious stones or pearls, but only Torah and good deeds alone. And I know that because it says it in Proverbs, says Rabbi Yosef ben Kisma. It says, when you walk, it will lead you. When you lie down, it will watch over you. And when you are awake, it will talk with you. What do you mean? What does that mean? So he explained, when you walk, it will lead you. When you walk in this world, and you have Torah, and you have mitzvot, and you're connected to Hashem, it's going to lead you. It's almost like you said about, what would my father say? How would my father think about the situation? So when you have that, and certainly when you have Torah, it allows you to think with clarity. So that's when you walk, it will lead you in this world. When you lie down, it will watch over you. That is in the resting place when we are buried. The Torah will watch over us. The precious deeds, good mitzvot that we did, they're like a currency that we have even after we're alive. And when you are awake, it will talk with you. That is in the world to come, like you mentioned in Gan Eden. That's in the world to come. And King David wrote it in Psalms. He says, I prefer the teaching you proclaim to thousands of pieces of gold and silver. In Hebrew, it's Tov li toat picha, me'alfei zahav kesef. And so we are certain that the good deeds that Yosef, Joe Pia practiced are standing for him. They were leading him while he was alive. They are with him now that he's imparting into the next world. And they will be with him in the world to come in Tchiyat HaMetim. We're also inspired to hear these stories about Joe, to do more mitzvot ourselves, to become even closer with our identity, even closer with Hashem, even closer with the Torah, when hearing of this beautiful friend of ours, father and community member, cousin and uncle. I'm certain that this must be a very challenging time for the children, with deep thoughts and feelings that you may have. And on behalf of everyone here in the community, we wish you our condolences and wishes of comfort to Shelly, Jeannie, Michael, and Tom. As we say traditionally, Mina Shemayim Tenuchamu, may you be comforted from heaven. And we also remember that as family, as friends, and certainly as children of Joe, we have a key in our hand right now to help elevate our father's soul to the highest possible place in the Garden of Eden. Certainly in the 7 days, 30 days, in this first year of mourning, that's why we have this first year, we almost have the key to be elevating our father even more and more. When we say Kaddish, when we do mitzvot, when we have a good thought, when we remember Hashem, when we talk to Hashem, when we're in the elevator or something like that, just like that. That is such an elevation to our beloved father and friend. And so Joe was a person of the earlier generation. Someone today sent me a message, you know, he was from the elders. That's what they called him. He was from the elders. Today, therefore, it is a loss, certainly to our community, and a moment of deep appreciation as to the link that we consider where we came from. And at this very opportunity, we ask Joe for mechila and slicha, for forgiveness, if we have done or said anything, again, his will or his wish, intentionally or not. We ask you for forgiveness, and we also forgive for anything whatsoever that may have been done. We'd also like to announce that the family will be holding prayers at Ezra B'Tzarot at EB beginning this evening through Sunday night, with the exclusion of Friday night. It's at 8 p.m. There will also be a mourner's meal at the Klein following the service here, the ceremony here, as soon as we're done here. Whoever would like to join us at the Klein, we will be there for a little while. And we also encourage everyone to please take a mitzvah upon yourself, think a mitzvah. I mean, if there's something you'd like to do, if you've been wanting to get back on track lighting Shabbat candles every Friday night, it's such an important Jewish value, maybe do that. Maybe Joe can inspire you to do that. Maybe if you want to put on tefillin at any point, it's been a while, go ahead and do that. Maybe you're already doing those things, and then do them with more commitment, more concentration, in a quiet space. Maybe it's about different things that you may have in mind. And we each know that we all want to grow in various different areas. So that's one thing. And secondly, I have so much appreciation for the Sephardic Brotherhood and how they care for our family members, our friends. And so if anyone would like to make a contribution to them, I know that they have abilities for us to donate. And I even seen that, I haven't seen this before, this little thing with a QR code and a Zelle code, and all these guys are really on top of their thing. So that's very nice of them. So at this, we're about to head out to the next and final phase of the ceremony today, which is the burial site. And so we have certain traditions in Minhagim as to not speak unnecessary conversation. That's probably one of the hardest things. You know, it's harder than not speaking at synagogue, definitely. So not doing that. And if there's any Kohanim here, not to enter that area. And also when we leave, we have a washing station where we wash our hands. But we do not dry them, as to try to have the memory of the beloved linger for a little bit longer. And that being said, we'd like to call the pallbearers to lead us as we make our way forward.